I'm Carol Ann.
And I'm Matt, and we are the hosts of Boozed and Confused.
Boozed and Confused dives into the weird topics that you never knew existed.
Join us every Monday to drink and discuss all things unknown, unexpected, otherworldly, and just plain strange.
Each week, we will take you on a journey to learn about things like time travel and who John Teeter is.
Weird history like the New England Vampire Panic.
Conspiracy theories like Katy Perry being JonBenet Ramsey or aliens.
Or the paranormal like ghosts that haunt the White House.
Listen to Boozed and Confused every Monday wherever you get your podcasts.
See you then.
This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
Welcome to Reverie True Crime. Today is an incredibly special episode with the founders of the True Crime app that is changing the game in many wonderful ways, and that app is, of course, Crime Door. Welcome to the show, Mr. Neil and Mrs. Lauren Mant. How are y'all?
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having us.
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad y'all are here. So, can you both tell our listeners a little bit about your backgrounds and how Crime Door came to be?
Well, I have a long background in media. I've been, I guess the easiest way to describe my job is as a producer. I've produced movies and television shows and I was a journalist for a period of my career. Actually, this is journalism we're doing right now. And so I've been in the content space my whole life. And I was really excited to try and be a part of something big. And when I mean big, I mean the electric light is a big idea. The television is big. The automobile is big. The internet is big. The smartphone is big. And so I've always been looking for something big. And having played in television cinema, that was great. The internet, I wasn't a technical person, so I didn't understand that when it came to be. I wasn't prepared. Like, none of us were prepared for that. And so it just wasn't something that I was able to connect with until much, much later as how to be a content creator for it. So I missed out on that. And like anything, if you're early, you know, there's opportunities for great success and opportunities to pave a new way and be a pioneer. And when the mobile phone came out, the smartphone came out, same deal, it was a big shock. And I had, you know, I had a mobile phone. I'd been using mobile devices for a long time, but I didn't see that coming so quickly, that content machine. And when it happened, my brother and I, we've been producers together for many years, we started making content, but we, you know, the machine of YouTube and the way it works, you know, really behind the scenes and the way you have to produce content and market it, it wasn't really clear in the first, you know, couple of months or year of it. And we were really focused on making some television shows and movies. And so, you know, we didn't really connect with that big thing initially either. And we've been able to, you know, make mobile content and web content, but it just wasn't like the people who were there in the beginning and they really skyrocketed with it. And they were, again, pioneers. And so, I knew that the next big thing would be the three-dimensional growth of the internet, which is called the spatial web. And that is all called immersive media. It's where you're able to really connect with it. And not today, it's discoverable on a mobile device. And there are some eyewear you can get out there, like, you know, very professional eyewear, like the Microsoft HoloLens. It looks like the thing that Tom Cruise wore in Minority Report when he was doing his detective work from the headquarters. And that's not for everybody, obviously. It's a $3,000 piece of equipment. It's, you know, a lot of technical things in it. And so we're just now starting to see consumer glasses come into the market. Later this year, Facebook and Ray-Ban have a partnership. But I could see in 2012 and 11 that this was really starting to take shape and very early. But in 2014, Facebook bought a company called Oculus, and that's a VR goggle. And they kind of made that their flagship immersive technology and hardware. And they have done well, they're the leaders. Nobody's at their level right now. And so they've done some pretty amazing things with it, and they've iterated on the devices, and they're getting better all the time. And so that, for me, was the signal, like, this party has started. And Lauren and I were married, and we have been partners in business since the TV days and the movie days. In fact, I proposed to her while we were making a movie in India called Million Dollar Arm. It was a Disney movie, and it was about these two kids that got scouted to be Major League Baseball players. Oh, and so it was her 30th birthday, and I was like, "Oh, come to India! You know, I'm going to work, and you can walk around with me." And the whole time, I had this elaborate proposal set. And it, by the way, you can look at it on YouTube. It's just Google Neil Mann's proposal, and you'll see.
Really?
Oh my God, it's so ridiculously awesome! You'll love it.
Oh, I can't wait.
And so at that moment, we had both decided we were going to really move our efforts into immersive media. And we initially did work in the VR space. We created some very cool content. We produced the Super Bowl in VR for the Eagles, and we produced a live New Year's Eve for Fox, and we created some technology.
And just along this line, you know, over the years, I'm listening to true crime content, consuming TV shows, documentaries, you know, anything that I can get my hands on. I'm really interested in it as far as cases and what the stories are and what is it about each victim and perpetrator and how these stories play out in the real world in the news. And Neil and I had really been working in his production company for a while, and you know, the last almost 3 years, I'd say 2.5 years, we just started developing what this idea could be for Crime Door. And we took his experience a lot with media and production and this immersive space, and then also this genre of content that has so much reach and is so powerful. And it's like, how do we merge that together in a unique way to serve the community? And so it was definitely a slow development. And since COVID, we really put the pedal down and have created this amazing app that I'm so excited to be on your show and talk to you more about, because it is, it really has been a labor of love for us to put this together.
Yeah, there was kind of an aha moment. You know, again, for several years, we were trying to figure out, what could we do with immersive media, with virtual reality and augmented reality? What was going to be our thing? You know, we knew it was important. We knew it was a great idea and a great opportunity, but we didn't know what we would do with it. And I think that's what a lot of people in the space are still trying to figure out. Because right now, like, the most common augmented reality you see is, like, you'll have to download an app for, like, Burger King, and then you take your camera phone, and you point it at the Burger King logo, and then a little Burger King guy will come off of it, and he'll do a dance, and you get a nickel off of Burger King. And that's like a promotional gimmick.
Yeah. You want to do something you're passionate about with the immersive media, too, I would think. So you would always want to keep doing it and have a purpose behind it.
Yeah, well, we hadn't even got that far. We were just trying to figure out what was an organic use of the technology. And then we would find a way that we could use it. And we really studied Pokemon Go for a very long time, a couple of years. And you're like, how can you study Pokemon for a couple of years? What's the complexity of it? You know, you take your phone, you point at the ground, and a 2-foot Pokemon appears. But there's a lot about that that is important to understand. And that's really the one word is understanding. And so now I could place this Pokemon, and anybody that's a kid has probably seen this. And you think, wow, what a little gimmick. But you immediately can at least compare your height compared to the Pokemon's height. Mm-hmm. And that sense of presence gave you a different understanding of the cartoon or the comic book. And so now you could watch the cartoon, you go, oh, I know how big that is compared to that. And so I know how I would fit into that scene. And it started unlocking that understanding. And then it was like, you know, a year and a half later that we were really kind of talking about, continuously talking about how do we do something with AR. And we realized that crime content, true crime content, would benefit greatly from that greater understanding, where you could walk into something and you could experience it. And now suddenly you have that sense of presence that, you know, gets you deeper into the story. And then it would complement each other. The AR would complement the 2D. And then, you know, when you're getting into the heavy duty true crime stuff, and, you know, we figured out the kind of the concepts of the tech, that, and we realized, oh, wow, you know, there's a big platform opportunity. And that's where Lauren kind of really started driving the ship.
So do you have a particular TV show, Lauren, or crime case or trial that really gripped you and started your interest in true crime?
Well, I have vague memories. You know, I grew up in the Valley in Los Angeles. So I think it was a peripheral hearing on the news. You know, they just had the Night Stalker documentary out earlier this year. And that was something that I heard about as a child. I think the trial was going on. And I asked my mom, this is the funny story in the household. I said, do we have an alarm in our house? You know, for some reason I was scared. And she said, yeah, look at that box over there. That's the alarm. And I was like, great. And I felt better. And it turned out to just be the electrical panel. But for a little kid, that fear, you know, and I don't know where it came from, but I do remember hearing that on the news. I remember, you know, the OJ trial when that was happening. We watched it in our middle school classroom. And, you know, that was a big deal. And also, you know, when Columbine happened, I was also the same age as the kids. So it's like these little cases that become huge in, you know, not little cases, but these cases become huge in your life. And for whatever phase you're at, it affects you in different ways. And so I think it's that interest in how did this happen? Who is this person? Why did it happen? And so it's that intrigue into the story, you know, and, you know, really the why and, you know, trying to understand it.
Well, for me, it was the Oakland County child killer, serial killer in Michigan. And this was in the 1970s. And I was the same age as all these boys that were going missing. And that also lined up with the Atlanta child killing cases. They were all happening at the same time. Yeah. And people were theorizing that they could somehow be related or whatnot. And so it was a scary time for a 10-year-old. And so, you know, I'll never forget that. And, you know, it was, like I said, it was local. It was in my neighborhood that this was happening. And so I think when you have something that resonates with you, like Lauren said, as a child, you know, it makes everything heightened for you. And, you know, one of the things we talk about in the great opportunities with this platform is we're able to educate so many people around the world about victims who have essentially been forgotten to time. You know, we only hear about the big cases these days, but there are people that have gone missing forever and ever and ever. And we go way back in time to tell these stories. And when I look at a case that appears to be a small case in the app, you see there's like maybe one video or one article. You know, I think about, wow, what a great opportunity this is for this family now. You know, the Facebook page they made from the murder that happened, you know, 40 years ago is not getting any attention. Now there's a new platform where people can discover this content and then, you know, bring their ideas to the table. So I think this is going to connect with people, you know, in very unique ways.
Yeah. And I know there's two cases. One is from my hometown, and they did a show about it on Oxygen. Jessica Chambers, I don't know if y'all have heard of her. She was 19. I think she was going home, but somebody lit her on fire. They poured gasoline and everything all down her throat and just lit everything up. And someone passed by and called 911. And when they got there, they said she just looked like something out of a horror movie, like a zombie. She passed away, but she was able to try to whisper a name. And to this day, we really don't know who it was. And it's terrifying. There's a girl's case that was, I think this happened in the 90s, and I did an episode on her, and her name's Lee Ochi, and she's from Tupelo, and come to find out that she had been kidnapped and murdered, and people suspect either her mother or this man that she went to church with that kind of got in good with the family, and Lee was staying home for the first time ever while her mom went to work, and there was a storm coming, and the mom knew that Lee was terrified of storms, so she was calling, trying to check on her that morning, and when she got there, there was blood everywhere, and nobody's found her since.
Yeah. There's so many stories like that, that we've researched and had our team, you know, look into to do the deep dive, and it really hits, you know, it hits you in a spot where it's so difficult to read these stories over and over, but you want to give a voice to these victims and tell their story and make sure that we keep bringing it up, you know, that we don't forget about it. You know, where is she, you know, where is she? And that brings it home so much more to keep hearing these stories over and over. And you want to do right by the family and who the person was.
Very true. And while you were watching the OJ trial, here's Neil over here producing it. So how was that experience?
Well, I had been a journalist. I had been a news reporter for several years, maybe like 5 or 6 years, no more than that, 7 years. And and then I got a call from ABC News, and they asked me if I was available to produce the trial. And we didn't know it was going to be that long. I initially was booked for like maybe 3 weeks. And then it just, you know, the public got so enthralled in the case.
You live downtown.
I was there all the time. And it was, you know, every day, you know, we would do, you know, a live shot in the morning. And then my reporter and I would sit in a little room, and we would watch the trial. We were like in the parking lot across the street. Only a limited amount of people were allowed in the building. And we just sit and watch the trial, and then we would take notes. And then, you know, when it was a lunch break, we would talk about what happened. And then as the day was starting to wind down, we would write the story, and then we would send the notes to the network, and they would then, they were recording as well. And then they would make the package, which then we would roll in live when we went in the evening, and we would do, you know, 6 o'clock for the, so we started at like 3 o'clock. So we do 6 o'clock for the East Coast, 6 o'clock for Central, 6 o'clock for Mountain, 6 o'clock for Pacific. And then they would do it again for 11 o'clock at night. So it was like 9 in the morning, noon, and et cetera. And so we were reporting all this the time. And it was very surreal being there and watching, you know, sort of the world follow this story. And I was like literally there every day. You know, I would see Johnny Cochran and the whole mob, you know, get out of their car, and they'd walk right in front of the courtyard. They do a little presser there, and then they'd go in. And I was a part of that. And it was just kind of hard to explain. You know, it was partly just I'm a producer. That's my job, and I have to be focused on the story. And personally, I'm sort of in this big moment in time. And I had never been a part of that kind of moment in my life. I mean, very few people ever have that happen. And so it was weird. And in fact, during that time, I was pulled away to produce the Oklahoma City bombing for a few weeks. And so here I was at this other big, crazy event. And then I did the Unabomber for a minute. And so I was in these big, big stories. And, you know, they're terrible to just think about, much less write about every day and tell the story. Gosh. So, you know, it drained me in a lot of ways. And after that trial, I stopped being a news producer and stopped being a reporter. I was really, you know, kind of rocked from the whole thing. And, you know, even Lauren and I were married, you know, we've been married like 7 years now, 8 years, Seven years. And and I mean, she can tell you, like, I never ever talked about the trial.
No, and I would ask him questions and bring it up, and it was almost like that was a part of his career that he kind of put in the past because it was so much, so heavy, and just a lot, I think, mentally to wrap your head around for those huge cases and huge things in history to have happened. And so it also, you know, it brings it full circle for him too, where when we talk about these cases, he's like, I lived it and I was there. And so listening to different podcasts talk about the cases, and it's so interesting to have somebody who's also on the ground as well.
Yeah. And I can imagine that for a lot of people who may have had to do that, it could be a very traumatic experience to be there on the ground.
Oh, for sure. Look, it you know, I have many friends who are reporters and producers, and you know, some point in it, you know, again, there's a professionalism that you have. You understand, it's like a doctor, you know, people are going to die. He understands that. And it's horrible and it's tragic and they have to deal with it. And somehow you have to pull yourself through that. And so, you know, I understood that and other people understand it. But it was just so, for me, I'm a storyteller. And so I'm telling terrible stories. And I didn't want to tell terrible stories. I wanted to make television shows and movies. And I have a sweetness in me that I want to tell happy stories. And, you know, if you look at my films, I think you'll see that they're happy in the end. And so I felt like a guy, I mean, Lauren used to be like, wow, you never even talk about this thing. I felt like a guy who was in war and came home with PTSD. Like, I just couldn't talk about it. I never mentioned it. It wasn't something that was on my resume that I talked about. I mean, people, you know, late, it was only when we got married that I started talking about it.
Maybe, I think you probably, Lauren, helped him kind of get through that in a therapeutic kind of way, maybe by opening him up and talking to him about it.
It's something that it's okay to talk about. It was a big part of his life. You know, I can't imagine being there at Oklahoma City within hours after the bombing, and how traumatic that would have been. But I do think talking about it and having that dialogue, if not with me, then other friends or people that were there, you know, he's reached out recently to many reporters and other producers that he's worked with over the years, just to reconnect and talk about stories and how they are, what they're doing now, and how their careers have evolved over the years and over different huge stories like the ones he mentioned.
Yeah, like Chris Hansen from To Catch a Predator. He and I worked together when I was a news reporter in Detroit. This is back in 1990. And we had desks next to each other. And in fact, had gone to my high school. He was older than me. But, you know, we knew each other at that time period. And then he went on to NBC and I went out to West Coast. And, you know, you meet people and it's like, yeah, you go the separate ways. And I hadn't talked to him in many years until we started doing Crime Door and we reconnected. And we were, you know, talking about our time in Oklahoma City because we were both there. And it's, you know, it's like a weird thing to commiserate with somebody over something like that. And you're just like, yeah, that was terrible. Oh, my God, it was terrible. And, of course, then you think about all the people. You're just like the families. It's just, you know, it's so hard to explain.
Yeah, it's so hard to put a lot of feelings into words. I'm sure that it's just things you cannot explain.
It's just the families, you know, these are people and, you know, their day was fine and then everything was changed forever. And so that process is hard for me, but for some reason, I think, and for women, because they follow true crime and they know this isn't a joke, they know this is very real and they're constantly on alert for this, they're able to, I think, contextualize it better than I was.
Well, maybe to go to something lighter, when you how was Crime Door created? Like, how does immersive media work? How does the spatial web work? How do we actually get to experience what we do with Crime Door?
Well, first, I'll point out real quick that we're going to do an interactive piece on the show in a minute with Crime Door. So mm-hmm. anybody who hasn't downloaded Crime Door, go ahead and download it while we're talking about it, because we're gonna start doing some interesting things during this program. But you know, the immersive web, the spatial web,
yeah.
it basically yes. puts information in the real world. Now let's just take the leap and go to the eyewear, because that's when it gets exciting. And it's still a couple of years out until we see the amazing stuff. Even though Facebook okay. has a thing happening this year, it's not the real, real deal. The real, real deal is probably somewhere around 2024, 2025, 2026. And at that point, you know, I tell people, everyone's going to wear glasses. And people are like, I'm not going to wear glasses. I don't wear glasses. And I say, you know, you will, because it's a superpower. You know, at the bare minimum, you'll be able to put on your eyewear and you could be in a room of 1,000 people. And the little camera will recognize everyone's facial recognition. And boom, there's a LinkedIn or a Facebook or Instagram photo or profile right next to their face. And so nobody's going to be without that, you know, amazing skill. But it's going to be so helpful in many other ways. So you'll be able to take an orange and I'll be able to take an orange, the same orange or different ones, and look at it with our lenses. And it will identify where it came from. Right down to the exact tree in the orchard. All of it will be scanned visually through artificial intelligence and using camera systems and augmented reality. And so when you look at that orange, it's going to pop up like a graphic off of the orange and it'll give you all that statistics, but it'll also know how many steps you took that day and what your diet has been recently, because we're increasingly giving more information to personalize all this. And so it will tell you, yeah. it'll say, Paige, this is the caloric intake of this orange for you at this exact moment. And so that wow. kind of information everywhere, you know, will make the eyewear a must have. And so you'll have a three-dimensional internet. When you go to a store, there'll be content everywhere. I mean, already now you could use your phone to put makeup on through augmented reality. Or try on clothes sure. through augmented reality. So it's going to add a lot of efficiencies in your life. You can use your phone's AR app to put an IKEA couch in the corner. And you can see it there. You can take a photo of it. And these kinds of uses of AR, they allow you to not return things. Because you've tried it out. You've seen it in your room. You put it on your Facebook. Your friends have seen it. And they talk about how great you are for buying that couch. You're like, okay, I understand the couch. I'm going to buy it online comfortably, and I don't think I'm going to need to return it. And so the amount of efficiencies that the spatial web is going to afford us are really mind-boggling and really impossible for me to even offer you even more detail, because I can't even think about all the ways, and I know this stuff.
It's hard to wrap your mind around the things that we're already doing, like even the little things like Pokemon Go. And now we have Crime Door that's even more real than the Pokemon Go. So it's like, gosh, the way that things change and develop is unreal. And it goes so fast.
It's moving faster than anybody can imagine. And again, I go back to the person who says, oh, I'm not going to wear glasses. And I say, do you still have a flip phone? Do you have a brick phone? Do you have a bag phone? Do you have a home phone? A rotary phone? The answer is no, you don't have any of that stuff. You transition to it. And right now you got a supercomputer in your pocket that everyone's hunched over, addicted mm-hmm. to. How about if you wear the eyewear and you're upright and you don't have this weighted thing in your pocket and it's seamless? You know, it's just yeah. going to be such a big transition. You know, Lauren and I knew we had to find a way into this new technology and storytelling.
Mm-hmm. And so really Crime Door came to be because we, you know, watched a million documentaries and Neil wanted to know, I had already watched them, I'm sure, but I was trying to get him into more of the content that I was watching. And he wanted to know more and more information about these cases. And he said, where's the place to go? Where is the app or the website? And I'm like, there isn't really one place. There isn't really one rabbit hole. There's many different ones. There's many different ways to do your own searches. You don't really know if you're going to the right place or maybe what that website Is it truthful information? So I think that was really the moment where we're like, okay, well, that's a need for this community of people. And, you know, if the user can understand a case better and they can learn more and maybe help solve the case, then that would be the most amazing thing that we could ever do. You know, in our whole life, to help solve a case would be something that we could never even have dreamt of. And if the understanding can get that much better because of this new technology, this is something that we should try and utilize and put in this app to have the users, you know, dig deeper, look for those clues, and maybe help a family or two or understand a historical moment by walking into it or looking at it from an overlay on your desk. And there's so many opportunities and ways to integrate technology that will only keep moving forward into this genre that really needs all the help that it can get from the community and families and people that care about these victims.
And it's not all about the immersive content. There's over 100,000 hours of free two-dimensional content. And so Lauren said, I was asking about the place to go and get this information. And, you know, she said, well, there's no ESPN.com. There's no central holding environment where someone is curated, because Oxygen app is only pushing Oxygen shows, and the Discovery ID app is only pushing Discovery ID shows. There was no Switzerland that was taking from everybody. And so that really was the real thing where we were like, oh, wow, there's a huge need for this. Because if you right now, if you went on the internet and you searched George Floyd, you would only see trial. You would see trial footage, trial articles, that's it. And you probably only see the conviction of the trial. It's only through opening 10, 20, and 50 yes. tabs can you go back in time and start seeing the origins of the story. Well, that's a lot of work. And I don't want to be a detective to just find out basic information. I wanted to go to a central place. And we realized, well, that there's a real need for that. And then, again, Lauren, she had the ability to manage all of that content and identify, this is what we should be covering, and these are ways we should be covering.
Yeah. As someone who tries so hard to find information, especially on victims, and to go through page after page after page just to try to get a simple biography of who they were, or just any little thing that will tell us more about the victim, it is nearly impossible. And I think that's one reason why it's so wonderful that y'all work with families, because they can tell you guys about, okay, this is who my son or daughter was. You know, I think that's incredible, because as, you know, we research, we can't find enough on the victims. And that is usually one of our biggest issues with doing what we do, is we need more about the victims, and it's so hard to find that.
Yeah, absolutely. And even in these older cases, you know, there's only so much in the smaller articles you can find online. I mean, luckily it's come a long way, but there's definitely a need to get accurate information and details about the people and the cases, and try and connect the dots.
Yeah, for sure.
We've entered into some really, great partnerships with some families already. We worked with Kelsey German, the sister of Libby German, in the Delphi case. We're working with the Zahau family about the Zahau case, the Rebecca Zahau case. And in each situation, and more, and in each situation, we have, like Lauren said, the ability to really get to know the family and understand their perspective. Because you talk about being on the ground, there's nobody more on the ground than with them. And, you know, there's all kinds of bureaucracies involved in people, you know, law enforcement and members of the community and trying to solve crimes. And, you know, it's sensitivity to what evidence can be out there. There's so many, you know, barriers that they're presented with. And they're not necessarily unreasonable. I can understand where police would not want to release all the evidence. I get that. But it leaves the family in a very difficult spot because more than anything, they want answers. And so we've had good experiences working with these families, and we're very proud of our work. And I believe that they're very happy with our experience.
I think one of the things is that we've all seen, you know, crime scene pictures. But with this, when we walk in, it's like you're literally there. You get to look on top. You get to look up, around. It is unreal. So do y'all want to go through some crime doors?
The app, now's the time to download it. We're going to go through three doors. And so if you're downloading it while we're starting, you'll be able to get through the second or the third door. The first thing we're going to go through is the Delphi case.
Okay.
And so the app is very simple to use. You simply open it up and you'll get to a welcome warning page, which you should know that this is adult content, obviously. Then you hit the continue button and you come into the home page. The home page offers you true crime news as well as carousels of content that are programmed. All of the content follows the same format. You simply just tap on a case, and then you get articles and videos and other content that has been organized for you specifically. And you can look at the map on the bottom right-hand corner, and that can show you cases around you. It reads your location. Or you could just hit the AR doors button, which would let you go right into various doors. And so I'm going to go through it real quick. And as I said, we're going to go to the Delphi door. To make one of these doors, we work very hard to have all the accurate information. And that means photos or videos if they exist. We went through so much content for Delphi because there was a lot of media coverage. And we caught it from every angle. We got overheads. We got videos. We interviewed people. And we feel very confident, right down to what boards the girls are standing on and the spacing of that. And so you simply just tap on the case profile, and you'll see where it says Activate AR Crime Door. You're going to want to have good lighting in this, even lighting, because AR is using a camera. And it's reading your environment. Same thing with the floor. You know, if you had a super checkered pattern on the floor, that could confuse the camera. Remember, this is a camera and technology. It's not our app. It's what Google and Apple have made. So you just tap on the activate the door, and that will download it into your phone. And it's going to depend on the Wi-Fi connection you have or what kind of phone you have. If you have a newer phone, it'll move quicker. That'll allow you to then access the camera. And you will scan the floor, and a blue dot will appear. And then now you can just physically walk through that door, or there's a little red ball in the bottom, and you can use that to inch your way into the door. And that's perfect for people who have a small apartment, or just not a big room. And now you can get through it. And I do a combination, because again, I don't have a gigantic space. I don't have a football field.
Right.
So I will enter the door using a joystick, and then when I get to a spot I like, I'll stand up and I'll explore it a little bit more, and then I can go in and out of the door, and I can get close to the characters in here. And this has a complete view, 360 degrees, of being on that bridge. And so right down to the time of day, the weather, all of that we've researched. All right, let's go move on to another one. Let's go to, let me see here.
What about the Travis Alexander with Jody Arias?
Yeah, that's an intense one. That's a real big...
It is.
Yeah, so, I mean, this one, again, these are horrible stories. And we tell different moments in time of the stories. So, in the case of Delphi, you're able to visit the scene prior to the crime happening. You're on that bridge, and you see the bad guy, and you see the girls, and it's the moment before it happens. And so in the case of Travis Alexander, we're there afterwards. We're in that moment when he has been discovered. And so you're looking at a pretty horrific scene.
Yeah, I will give a trigger warning, because if you're not in, you know, if you don't want to see something that is very detailed like this, then I wouldn't go through this door. But, you know, some people really like to see what was really there and, you know, look at everything. And the crazy thing is you can get as close on the victim as you want. You can examine each scar, each bruise. It's unbelievable. And when you tilt your phone up towards the ceiling and look down, you can see into the sink. And it's just, it's unreal what you can do with this app.
Yeah, and for us, we really, accuracy is key. We're not putting any other thoughts. We're not putting any theories into it. This is strictly the facts that we know from the crime scene images. And for Delphi, especially, working with her sister was really important. What model phone did she have? What was the phone case? What was the exact color of the sweatshirt? So Travis Alexander is, it's very graphic, and it really shows you this small space of his bathroom and his bedroom.
Was really surprised at how small it was.
Yeah, you're able to explore the whole area. And again, the details in Travis Alexander, like if you go into the bedroom, there's a pair of flip-flops on the floor.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's a specific style of flip-flop. And if you look, one shoe is upside down. It's exactly in that manner. And so it's like the positioning of the flip-flop, the positioning of the blood droplets are exact. And so, yes, it's no joke, this door. But if you want to understand forensic science, this is one that you could really explore. And you could see, you know, the patterns of the blood and how horrific this crime is, that it really moved across multiple rooms. So again, not for the faint of heart, but it is accurate.
Right. And I was walking through it earlier, and I thought I had saw everything. And then when I turned around, I spotted a little bullet on the floor. And I was like, I didn't even see that the first time. So I think, you know, each time you look, you might see something totally different that you didn't see the first time.
And you're, because all the other media is there, you're able to cross-reference. You can look into the door, and then, as you say, you find a piece of evidence. Oh, now I can go back to the article or the video, and I can hear the story about that piece of evidence. Mm-hmm. Or in the case of making a podcast, again, we're walking through it and we're pointing things out. So, you know, you could do a whole show with just one door, walking through that whole door. And so we see, again, all of this leads to a greater understanding.
It really does.
Okay, so which one would you like to try next?
What door really interests you the most, Neil or Lauren?
Again, story for all of them, I think, is very interesting. You know, I think for me, Abraham Lincoln is pretty amazing.
Okay, you want to go through that one?
Yeah, I mean, everything, remember, these are moments in history. And
right.
When I talk with certain people, they're like, wow, this is all sounds intense. And I say, oh, you can see Abraham Lincoln's deathbed scene. And they're like, oh, really? And so you suddenly start to connect with history buffs.
Oh, for sure. When I went through the crucifixion of Jesus the other day, I had chills all over me. It was unbelievable to feel like you were standing there. I was really shook up by that one.
But in the case of Jesus, again, high quality experience. But we all know the scene of Jesus on the cross. We know there were two other victims with him. We know there was a Roman soldier there. But when I ask people, I say, what is in front of Jesus? What is he looking at from that cross? People are lost. They say, well, the desert?
And when you are able to go into the door, you see that there's this gigantic city of Jerusalem that looks like it's out of Game of Thrones. It has a giant wall around it. And you realize that the crucifixions were quite common around cities that were Roman, a part of the Roman Empire. And they were basically a billboard that said, don't mess with the Romans. And it was right in front of the town, right on the hill. And in the case of Lincoln, you know, everyone's familiar with the Ford Theater story with John Wilkes Booth. However, you ask people what happened after that, and many people don't know the rest of the story. He was taken across the street, and he was put into a room, which they call a rubber room now, very, very small room. And there's, you know, a number of men in this room as he is, you know, about to succumb to his wound. And you come across generals, and his son is there. His wife is not there. She had been taken out of the room because she was so upset. Can you imagine that his wife is not allowed to be in there? And you know, so you get to walk through this moment and identify who is there and what that final moment was. And fortunately, you know, for us to be able to tell the story, it's extremely well documented. And the room still exists. It's a museum in Washington, D.C. So we're able to make sure it is totally accurate, even though we didn't have a series of photographs. We have the room and the story from history.
It's just amazing. It blows my mind. And this just takes investigation, forensics, just criminology, victimology. It takes it all to another level. And I really think that there are going to be cases solved because of this.
The opportunity to work with not only law enforcement and detectives and cold case investigators, you know, forensic scientists, and hopefully more and more families is to do that deep dive. So hopefully people can help and, you know, keep looking in our doorways and say, oh, there was something else different that I didn't see before. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, now that I'm going into it, I remember something from that time period, you know, it triggered something. And just keep that conversation going.
Well, before we close out, is there anything that y'all want to specifically point out about the app or talk about?
Yeah, I mean, as I have shared my enthusiasm for augmented reality, and I think it's this amazing technology, and I think we've used it in a great way. I really think it's important that people understand that you don't have to use the AR to really get a lot out of this app. The app is free. The 100,000 hours of content is free. There's no other place that has this amount of content and organized this manner. If you're interested in doing a more a larger deep dive into it and going into the crime scenes through AR, you're welcome, and when we offer that enthusiastically. But it's not all about that. It's about the two-dimensional content that gives people the ability to really dig into the case.
Yes. Yes, unlike when, like you said, we try to search Google and you got to go through 100 pages just to get to that one thing you were trying to find. And Crime Door is really that one place that has everything that you want right there. It's amazing. What y'all have done is incredible. And I just applaud y'all for
We're very excited about what we've done to date and where it can go. And the opportunity to have additional partners to help, you know, give a voice to these victims and to really grow the community. So it is very exciting, and it's something that Neil and I have done literally in our house during COVID, and it's all we're thinking about. So we welcome people to give us recommendations on cases. We're adding new ones every single day. So we'll keep getting larger and larger in our database, and it is international. So worldwide cases, send them over.
Yeah, and you just go to our website and submit a case. There's no cost. Every case, if there's content that exists, we will build out a case. So anybody, anywhere,
that's amazing.
Any family, any friend, anybody who has something that's close to them, all you have to do is email us and we will build that out.
That's amazing. And I will definitely you know, keep pushing that on social media, that, you know, if you have a loved one that it's a cold case, unsolved injustice in some way, get in contact and, you know, y'all will be happy to work with them and get these cases solved and bring, shine a light on these cases for sure.
Absolutely. And we understand that, you know, it's a heavy thing to deal with for so many people. And we just want to, you know, help lighten the load a little bit, help bring people together and have a space where, you know, we can have a community to talk to each other and hopefully find some really good solutions to these cases.
I believe so. I do. Thank y'all so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. All the, the explaining, the more understanding that we have about immersive media and the app and, you know, that's, you know, the crime doors are amazing, but that's also not the only thing available on the app. So just explaining everything and giving us more understanding. Thank y'all so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having us, Paige.
Oh, absolutely. And until next time, you guys, stay safe and take care.